Hey, welcome back, everybody. John Porteous of the Lovells Township Historical Society here, and you're listening to the Backcast Podcast. Glad you're here. Great show for you this week. Richard and I sit down with David Borma. David and his team have crafted a program called Voyager Canoe Trips, and outside of being able to paddle some fantastic water of a more significant nature, David and his team are really having a very positive impact on young men. So let's just jump right into it. David's got a lot of good info to share with us and good stories, so let's have at it. Hi again, everybody. It's John and Richard, and we're back with David Borma. David?
How are you doing?
Great to have you here. David runs a very interesting program. And namesake-wise, I do want to touch on that because I think that's interesting. So there might be some folks in our age demographic that might remember the other one as well. But regardless, David, tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Okay, well, we started our canoe group back in 2012. And it really started with a group of us guys sitting around talking about the youth today and some of the capers that these guys are involved with. You know, we all have stories about the youth today and our concern for them. And I said, well, hey, instead of just talking about them, I said, we all have daughters. Why don't we do some? And that way we can contribute, share some of the wisdom that we've learned. And what I call the pithy maxims that we grew up with, these older guys, you know, a lot of us older guys chummed around with guys that were at one time World War I veterans and World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, you know, and my dad served in Vietnam, but, you know, our generation touched those that were born in the 1800s. So a lot of us grew up around them, and you probably recall, you know, the way those homes were and, you know, the shops like this one we're in here, you know, the interesting things to look at. My grandfather was a machinist and did a lot of interesting things. And so it was easy to hang on to some of those maxims or little words of encouragement that they would share with you, you know, just the one-liners, some of them humorous. And I said, well, what if we put a program together that used all old, you know, gear and equipment, which I enjoy being around anyway. And I said, and we take them out and we rough it. No tents, you know. And
oh, wow. Okay.
We never use a tent.
No tents.
Wow. Sleep under the canoe. We've got a rain fly that we string up over a picket line if we do get a downpour, because we all sleep on canvas and then they double that canvas over their sleeping bags. So we've been out in 20-some degree weather.
A bedroll type.
So, and most of them never have had an opportunity to do that. Yeah. And then a lot of them that, you know, over the years, 40% of our young guys on the trips today don't have a father or a male figure in their homes. You know, so it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah. And we've calculated we got about 36 hours of one-on-one time outside of sleeping and, you know, getting ready and travel up and back. So you got about 36 hours to make an impression, and a lot of times it's just planting seeds. You don't know. Some of them will show improvement immediately. Some of them don't really need a lot of improvement. We get some good young guys that are come along on the trips, but then you get a couple of, you know, you get a couple that are a little cool for school and tough around the edges. Most of them are athletic and adept. So,
but how do you get your candidates or participants? Is there a vetting process, or you just
take
them as they come?
We get them from all over. We've had them come in from Ohio, Saginaw County, Grand Rapids area. Of course, the immediate area, there's a couple of schools, one Christian school that dovetails some of their kids into the program. Word of mouth. And it worked well because we weren't really equipped to do big trips. You get over 18 people on a trip, and it gets
a lot of logistics.
It does, yep. And it can get problematic, you know, because it, you know, not only does scale play a role in that, we pack everything the old-fashioned way. So all the food is packed in paper, meats and things like that. No plastic, no hot dogs. It's It's always, you know, so ribeyes or
you use the Duluth packs and the baskets and stuff like that?
Yeah. We got everybody gets a canoe pack. They get a little camp chair, folding wooden camp chair. Most of the stuff's rehabbed, and we got stuff that is... our camp stove's in 1923, for example.
There we go. So you really just walking into the Wayback Machine.
Oh, yeah. And it's, I tell you, one of the best parts about it is it keeps you hunting for parts.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So you're always looking. You know, you'll
show
order something
out of
Saskatchewan. eBay and the like have been pretty helpful. Finding things that are obscure, but...
Well, are all your kids at risk?
No.
Okay.
No. Like I say, you get some good guys, and then you get some young men that are, like I say, without guidance. You know, their moms will call, and almost always we talk with moms.
True.
Rarely do I deal with a dad, which is unfortunate. But the moms will call and say, hey, you know, we'd like them. We heard about your program one way or the other. And that's why we put 4 newsletters out, so somebody will pass it on. Or
is this a scholarship opportunity for families that aren't as flush?
That's right. We do. We sponsor someone every year.
Okay.
At least one.
Okay.
And then we also have secondary programs. We'll work with some of our sponsors, like Safari Club, Lakeshore Chapter. We'll sponsor, and they'll call us up and say, hey, we've got this bow camp. Anybody interested? And we'll sponsor somebody for
Safari
a weekend.
Club?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's...
Yeah. So, and then, you know, we've got some really great sponsors. They're all found on our website. Families and organizations. Most of them I've worked with over the years, and they know a little bit about me, and they, you know, they hear about the program. It's kind of interesting, you know. So
Dave, this is probably the optimum time to plug the website now.
Tell
our listeners.
Yeah. Voyagers, English spelling, so VOYAGERS, VoyagersCanoeTrips.com. And on there you can read a little bit about us and the background and our association with the past and trying to kind of keep it alive.
Well, this is a real, I'm looking at it now, it's a really slick website. It's got
great
graphics, and you know, the interactive part seems to be above par.
Yeah, that first picture on the homepage is the group of guys. They're all standing on a beaver dam that's about 450 feet long. And we hike back in there, and no one will tell them what's happening. You know, we hike back in there, and then we'll stop about halfway across that and say, hey, does anybody know where we're standing? And they'll say, in the woods. I'll say, well, spot on. But I say, you notice the water is 2 feet lower on this side than it is on this side. And then, you know, we'll lead into that. And it's things like that. You never know where those exposures are going to lead them. But it's once they go home, you know, sometimes you'll hear back from them later, or you'll run into a parent or a guardian or something, and they'll say, man, he couldn't stop talking about it, you know. Not all of them, I'm going to guess, but some of them, it really does impact them, because maybe they've never had a chance to do that, or they did it, but maybe it was in a campground, and really there's no attachment to the wilderness, you know.
Sure.
And that's what we want to do. So we try to select rivers that have very little along the lines of cabins and things of that nature. We'll choose the wilderness stretches, camp on the banks, so it's, you know, they
Did
see
you
everything
up in the Pigeon River country.
We have talked about it on the Black. That's one of them. We'll probably get to that. We've been trying to jump around. We have gone to the Upper Peninsula, done the Upper Two Hearted.
Okay.
We're going to be putting a trip together next year on the Escanaba.
Yep. Oh, fun.
So, yeah. So those are for the guys that have earned a badge. 3 trips, they earned a badge. And that can all be found on the awards tab there on our website. Well, we try to create incentives for these guys so they can earn an axe, and then there's maybe fly rod and a rig, and you know, one
I'm
of
assuming
the,
current technology with the fly rod and not
yeah, we do step it up a little bit. No,
yeah, horsehair line,
yeah. My with stuff's a little
solid,
older, but
the solid wood with the light flexi tip.
Yeah.
Lancewood.
Yeah, thank you.
Bamboo tip.
Yeah. Well, not to say we wouldn't entertain that at some point. But a lot of these guys are just getting into it. And again, it's all about planting seeds, because we don't know. Maybe some of them are going to remember what they did 10 years from now.
Well, do a lot of these kids come back every year then?
We have. We have a lot of return. And one of the incentives, again, is, so like we have a Cruiser Axe program. And the Cruiser Axe was a 2.5-pound saddle axe that cruisers, you know, timber cruisers would carry because they're lighter. Mm-hmm. And so we usually, we annually, we put one of those together. And then they, based on character, relationship, and task, and we explain this for each trip, and I should say it's twice annually. We explain at the beginning of the trip, hey, we're going to treat you like men. So unless you prove otherwise, we're going to treat you like men. Is everybody okay with that? Everybody nods. Yeah, we're good. Okay. Well, you're going to be needing to work on character, relationship, and task. And we explain that. What is character? And what is, you know, relationship? It's like being here, you know, being open to talking with somebody you don't know. And then being on task, making sure you're, hey, if you're on firewood duty, go.
Is your stack good?
And yeah, right. You know, is it chest high? Because it'll, you know, and we'll get into some of that, the nuances later, between the father-daughter trip, which is where we take all our daughters and men that have daughters and or granddaughters.
Okay,
or
so this is, primarily your audience are young males.
It is. Yeah, and we just started four. This will be our fourth annual this year that we started taking our young ladies out, because nice. That was the purpose. We started.
Well, I was
going to
say, that was kind of the genesis, wasn't it?
Man, you know, and it's become kind of one of my favorites. I hate saying that I have a favorite, necessarily. It's not, you know, that I prefer one or the other. It's just, I like having my daughters.
Well,
with,
sure. I
with,
mean, it's, you know, good bonding time, and it's a different set of engagement.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And I'll tell you this, those girls, they're campers. They,
oh,
when,
sure.
When you say go get fired,
hey, I'm a dad of two daughters.
They roll. You know. They'll come. We had eight girls hauling a log out of the woods, and I mean, they just kept going. I thought, holy smokes, we're gonna have a. And we never did. We never ran out of firewood.
We had Richard's daughter on the show, who's quite an outdoors lady, and has aside from that, turned her passion for the outdoors into a career, and you know. Just received her doctorate and worked all over the place, and so
it's got a bite to it.
She's with the Minnesota DNR, eh?
No kidding. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is where my wife's from, Minnesota. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So everybody always asks her, "Where are you from?"
Yeah.
But so yeah, we've got again incentives. There are a lot of repeats. Sometimes you might see a young man only once, and then sometimes you might see him 3-4 times. A lot of times they get into their 20s and start to get a job, and
oh sure,
and then
well, life happens.
Yeah, right. Every once in a while, matter of fact, on the way up here today, I had one of them call, who's a little closer to the family, but still I don't hear from him a whole lot, and he called. And
that's still pretty cool when that happens.
Yeah.
My wife's an educator, and I mean, there's a couple of kids from the first year that she taught that still circle back occasionally.
That's right.
And I mean, that's, you know, upwards of 40 years ago. So,
and
cool.
Really, that was the premise.
You got to love you for that.
Yeah.
What is it?
Oh, saying that?
The 40 year thing.
Oh, well,
yeah. Right.
Don't listen to this one, honey.
Love me for pretty much bringing attention to it.
But that's really, that is the premise, right? All of us have somebody in our past that we recall from our childhood. You know, maybe grandpa and dad played a role, or uncle. But there were also those other guys that came along, and like some of those that I had mentioned earlier. And I just, for some reason, they made such a impact in my life. And maybe it was they were a woodworker, or they tinkered with this or whatever, or had a lot of guns. You know, I remember one guy, Rich Burkett, and he was a bear hunter and all kinds of great stories. And I'm enamored with this guy, you know.
Big wide-eyed storytelling.
You know, he was kind of a tempered guy, but, you know, every once in a while he'd tell a story. It was a little exciting, and it was never a daring do story. It was always kind of like, I can't believe this happened to me, you know. You know, he had one story in particular that I guess I like to think about, because, you know, I don't know if you ever woke up in the middle of the night and found a bear in your camp or not, but, you know, you never react the way you want. You know, in retrospect,
what you think you're gonna do, right. A long way from what
you've always
do.
You know, you rehearse that, but you know, it never really works out exactly like rehearsal. But he had a story where he said, I woke up and he said the thing was eaten out of the pan that I left on the edge of the fire, and I fell asleep. And he there said, I saw it, and he said, I started running. And he said, no, I was running in the dark. He's a big guy. He was a big, burly guy. And he said, all of a sudden, something went right underneath my legs and knocked me out. He says, it was the bear. He said, we made a complete loop.
Complete
and went,
circle?
Went right underneath him.
That's
know?
Hilarious.
So, you know, it's just things like that. But those older guys, most of them are gone now. They left a lasting impression. And if we can do that with some of these young men today,
press it forward.
Maybe they don't respond right away. Maybe they get through their 20s and 30s and, you know, they follow their own passions, do this, that, whatever. But, you know, maybe they're going to rifle around in a box one day. You know they're never going to get rid of some of that stuff they've
sure.
earned. Them throwing hawks and a cruiser axe, which is all handmade. And there's pictures on our website, and I can show you some additionals. But knives, folding knives, you know, 18th century folding knives that we order in. And we've got some guys that manufacture some of this stuff to help out.
Well, I was going to say, are we talking complete old school with a blacksmith? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in some cases, yeah. When
that's
we can,
fantastic.
Like right now, the cruiser axe is getting harder to find. So I had collected so many of them over the years. And then take them in, bead blast them, blow them, refinish them,
okay.
put a new edge on them.
Is that like the old marble stuff then?
Yeah, right. There's a lot of different brands. I've got some, or we've already handed them out, awarded them, that were made in a forge. Who knows, blacksmith in a logging camp, hopefully, something like that. You know, got a good piece of hickory on it, and then we superheat that hickory and then douse it in walnut stain.
Okay.
And really turns it into kind of a real nice ebony, and then we engrave in the words per ardua, which is kind of one of our sayings. Per ardua
okay.
means through difficulties, and then the word loyalty. So when life gets tough, and that's what we talk about on these trips, when life gets tough, what are you going to do? Are you going to remain loyal to your values? Are you going to remain loyal to your character? Or are you going to give up? When we don't, you know, we got, everybody's got a good story about somebody who gave up. You know, and they're never romantic, right? Nobody ever says, man, you can't believe this guy. He really turned it around when he gave up. You know?
Exactly.
You know? We're always like, yeah, too bad
for
that guy.
Because
you know? Everybody's got something of value. I believe that. I see it. And when you take these rowdy young guys and some of these good young guys, different ages, sometimes we'll have, and the age is usually between 12. We'll take into the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But you put them all together, and it's like braiding a rope. I mean, they really come together, and it's surprising what they can do.
Well, it's exciting. I mean, you spoke earlier, this, you know, the challenges of single-parent families.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these kids that are at risk are amazing problem solvers.
Yeah.
They just need to solve the right problem.
That's right.
So steering them into,
right.
you know, how to navigate this path or portage their canoe or, you know, freshen that wood pile or whatever.
Yeah.
These are all
yep.
positive things.
And we'll do that with a young guy. We'll say, hey, you want to be on water duty? What's that? I said, well, explain it to him. And we try to explain everything and then say, hey, what's expected of you? If you know, you just monitor that. And you'd be surprised. They, like you say, they really do fall in and they get a chance to thrive. It's unfortunate that in some cases, and I don't want to make, you know, pick on anybody, but it's unfortunate that sometimes parents will get there and drop them off and say, hey, good luck, you know, right in front of mm-hmm. them and all their peers. And that's a really poor way to start, because you're kind of speaking death into the young man. And if you tell somebody they're going to fail enough, they're going to fail.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, the law of the lid, right? If you've ever read about that, it's true. You know, so we don't want that. We want to say, hey, take the lid off, be respectful, be honorable. You know, we preach, hey, it doesn't matter who your parents are, try to respect them for the good that they do,
mm-hmm.
the fact that you're here, you know. So, but that, again, boy, I'll tell you what, you might have a curriculum you follow, but it's hard to follow because, you know, you're out there in circumstances, you know.
Well,
something might happen. Somebody falls in the drink or whatever.
Sure. What's the old story? The Tyson line, you know, everybody has a game plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly.
It just kind of
yeah.
you know, goes out the window from there.
Well,
so
the program is, take care of all the stuff you can take care of so you get time to deal with the shit when it goes wrong.
That's it.
Yeah, right.
That's it.
We do have a lot of contingency plans. We plan for the worst, so we have trauma kits and things of that nature. We guys that are CPR trained, and we do a complete
Well, it's not completely
on...
primitive in that regard.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We do take extra precaution. You know, axe wielding, not a good place to have a wound
in the
leg, you know. And that, and I'll tell you what, that's
not often.
Probably one of the biggest fears we have is something like that. You know, a guy that's not
100%
accustomed to it, you know, he's swinging and he's not aware that his grip is loosening. Next thing you know,
even a mild deflection. End up in somebody's toe.
You bet.
The problem here is Barnard, he's the barber and leech master.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's absolutely right. Well, but, again, I think we monitor things the best we can. We try not to, it's not a free-for-all, you know, but there's certainly a lot of room to explore and to do a little fishing. Since we've adopted the fly fishing, that is without a doubt probably one of the greatest draws to the whole group.
Oh, sure.
Because I think, and I've had help. I'd like to highlight some of the men that are a part of this program. Andy Giroux, Frank Cox, Tom Kina, who is one of our advisors, and Carl Howard. These guys all bring their background and their talents to bear. And sometimes it helps me to see really where we should go next. Because, you know, it's not all me. It's I rely heavily on what they say. And sometimes it's their
There's
wisdom.
There's a lot of strength in collaboration.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I guess that begs a question, or maybe not begs it, but brings an opportunity to bring it up. Do you have fundraisers, or how do you...
We do, yep.
I mean, auctions and
meetings?
Yeah,
so we sponsored a shoot in Berry County. I would say the actual fundraisers probably would say no, but we try to get our name out there. Again, maybe we're at that point where we don't know what we want to do next. We want to grow it. We would love to start another chapter. That's one of the things we'd like to do, because that way you don't leverage everybody. Because right now there's a lot of work that goes into it, a lot in the planning and the packing. Everything's packed in wood crates. Some of the
talk about that, because you are going very rustic.
Yeah.
This isn't throwing stuff in the Tupperware and
no
putting your space age sleeping bag together and your
This isn't low impact REI camping. Yeah.
No.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Exactly. I will say this. I get that a lot. People say, "Why don't you bring lighter stuff?" And I'll go, "Because it's not as much fun." And for us, that's the way it works. Anything you're going to see in camp. And that's one more thing, too, is, you know, reading about how the mind works, and I've had help. Guys in our group that have a background in that really have, you know, kind of highlighted how the mind works and getting them to recognize they're in something different. I've never camped like this. They walk into the camp kitchen and they don't recognize almost anything in there. I mean, they can tell there's a pan, but it's cast iron. There's a griddle. They'll come back, the pancakes.
Ingredients in these big jars.
Oh, yeah. Right. It's all in jars and metal canisters and even the salt and pepper shakers. You know, it's all vintage stuff. And I think the food that we turn out because of that, and of course you're on the riverbank, and you know
everything
all this,
always tastes better in the wild.
Tastes better. You can drink coffee out of a rusty bucket, and you'll be like, "Man, this is the best coffee I've ever had in my life." You know, but so all of that goes in to get them out of there, because it's a paradigm shift that we're looking for, right? We want them to realize, "Hey, they've just turned a corner. I'm seeing something I've never seen before." And who knows? Like I say, 20 years from now, maybe they're doing it. You know, and it's more fun. Like I say, it's heavier. The wood boxes, I've tried to collect, for example, one of my canoe mentors, which is Craig Wood, he gave me his gear. He's in his mid-80s now, and he's got one of the last St. Mary's canoes made by Ben Richardson up in Sault Ste. Marie. And
tell our listeners what that means.
Okay,
so Ben, not everybody is going to be...
Yeah, he made wood canvas canoes.
There we go.
Like the old town, like the some of the makes you see. There were a lot of them in the 50s and older. But wood canvas canoe, and then all of his gear. So I've got gear that you open the lid and it says, you know, somewhere in Canada, 1930, written mm-hmm. in there, and things like that really catch people's attention.
Are all the boats canvas and wood boats?
Well, we have two fleets. We have what we call our
the old one and the one that floats.
Yeah. Well, the wood canvas canoes, we have some 1917, 1922, 1930s. We've got about 8 wood canvas canoes, and we will eventually have all of them employed. But the problem is, it's the group, right? Because they don't take as much banging. I mean, they'll take a lot. They'll take a lot more than people think they'll take. But you don't want to step off the bank into that with 1 foot.
Oh, no, right, no, no.
You know,
no.
And then, you know, crack the ribs.
That would be interesting, yeah.
It's not a good day. Or they go through the cane seats.
That would be a bad day.
Yeah, we've had cane seats that crack, and you're like, I think you just went through that cane seat. I don't think so. You're like, in about 30 minutes, you'll know.
Yeah.
And their butt's hanging through it by the end of the trip, and you're like, yeah, it feels good, doesn't it? It's like sitting on a small toilet.
Mm-hmm. You
know? With a porcupine under
it. Yeah. With a porcupine underneath.
Do you guys lash together your own canoe seats that way? Use the old, like, snowshoe style?
Yeah, caning. Yeah. Using, well, not necessarily rawhide. I have done a few. But you can buy that caning, and then you just fit the rim and
oh, okay.
press it in.
Okay, so more like a replacement screen.
Correct.
For the
yeah,
door.
Okay. Yeah. And it's got to be practical, because, you know, again, it's got to be workable. So that's why we have, and we do, several Kevlar canoes, so they're durable, lightweight, and we'll use those for our scouting trips. And then we'll employ him. Usually the guy in the lead is what we call the boule, and he'll have a smooth bottom, you know, Kevlar. And that way, if he comes around the bend and there's a sweeper or a log there or something like that,
he's not going to get taken out.
Yeah, and then he can call back and tell everybody to hold up until we get it cleared or whatever. So, yeah, so we've got a process that we follow.
So you just get on a river and go? And
we always
have. You been down the river?
Oh yeah, we never go down a river. We don't.
I was gonna say pre-scouting.
Absolutely, yeah. We never ever do anything without scouting the river, doing quite a bit of research. Most of us that have paddled know some of the stretches we run, and they're pretty regular paddles for us. But when we do branch out into a new river, we always scout it first. So that way, there's no surprises. We don't want to get anybody into rugged water or something like that, where we got, because you have multiple experience levels as well. You don't know who you're going to get.
Well, I have. Do you actually? Well, I guess repeat guys have experience,
mm-hmm.
but coming in, are they all canoeing is alien to them, or some have canoed through some other activity?
Some have. In my own personal opinion, I guess I think a lot of people have had experience with rental canoes. And that's why so many people hate canoeing, because they're always the cheap round bottom, you know, they're narrow, they're only, you know, 28 inches across
yeah,
the
exactly.
beam, and, you know, next thing you know, they're like, yeah, I flipped, and you're like, yeah, I get it, yeah, all you got to do is look at the water, you know, in one of those narrow rentals, and in some cases, I mean, a lot of that, you've got more modernized canoes and a lot of these liveries today, but.
I'm not a canoer, but I'm been on the water around canoers enough to, I've heard some, you know, been fortunate to learn some new swear words as those things went over and the people in them.
Yeah.
Express their displeasure. And,
yeah, we tell them, we usually give them a little 101 before we get in the water, what to expect, where we're going, float times, things of that nature. So they have a rough idea of what the agenda is. We'll tell them, say, hey, listen.
Give them some basic strokes. And
yeah, 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 we'll do that. And then we'll say, don't grab a hold of passing
don't.
Tree limbs.
Please,
I said,
don't
your
grab
arm
anything.
Will become a drive line or drive shaft. And I says, and you'll be so. And, you know, occasionally you'll get one that really didn't heed the warning. And next thing you know, they're all wet and frustrated. But that comes with the territory.
Well,
We don't have a lot of people flip. As a rule, I would say over the last 11 years, maybe three or four, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. So, but I would say attribute that to most of our canoes of like what they call the tumble home. So they've got hips and they're a wider beam. So you got 32 inch.
Oh, they got a little more chine on.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna and a keel, which is favorable to the beginner.
I know, fishing out in front of the lodge, occasionally when people used to put in, they used to drag stuff down the ditch.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and I picked up a lot of.
Debris.
Cushions and PFDs and things as they floated by and handed them back to those guys once they got themselves squared away.
But. Yeah. Andy Giroux in our group, he calls that a yard sale on the river.
There you go.
And it's a good description of exactly what it looks like. Now, that's one more reason why.
Grab it before it's gone.
Yeah, that's right. We tell them, we say, hey guys, maybe your water bottle or whatever else, but pack all your gear in that canoe pack if you do flip. It's it's not the hunt for Red October,
It's it's watertight too, right?
Not watertight. It's canvas, big heavy canvas,
still
and it's
canvas.
Got
okay.
And it's got the tump line, so
it's
a
vintage here. So it's
right. Well,
it's not one of the nice roll tops that floats.
I had the
forever.
Nice roll top.
You know what? That's good though, because I didn't mention that we do give them dry bags, put their sleeping bag in, and then their clothes go in the big dry bags. Really big. And then they go in with their boots or whatever. And we kind of choke it down. Here's the list of things to bring, which is also on our website. Hey, what to expect. If you go to the information page, it's, what can I expect? And for those that want to laugh maybe a little bit, read that. Because it's blunt. I mean,
it's blunt.
This is what you're going to get. We're not trying to sugarcoat any
of
the details.
You will get bit by a lot of bugs.
Yeah, not a lot of bugs that time of year. even on this June trip, we were really fortunate. We didn't have bugs. But we do have the dry bags. That way your gear and your clothing's protected. Nobody wants to sleep in a wet bag. And
not often. Have you done that more than once in scouting? Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, no, we really. Like I say, we've only had just a few flips all these years. As crazy as that sounds, we've had, I think, now over 260 young guys through the program. So I would say that's pretty good odds. But again, the canoes are a little wider. They're better canoes. And then we...
You're kind of rigging it for success.
Yeah. And we're not running through class 2, class 3 stuff.
Well,
so there's no, hey, get ready, guys, because it's going to get real for the next hour and a half, We did have some badge holder trips that were a little more adventurous and had some class 3 stuff. But, you're talking guys with a little more experience. And,
for sure.
They know what they're getting themselves into, so.
When you were given the website address earlier, you were talking about the American spelling of Voyagers.
Mm-hmm.
And before we started, we was telling you a little bit about Scouts and how that the Voyager canoeing organization resonated with me, kind of in one of those cobweb areas of my brain. And you shared an interesting tidbit that you... Apparently, when you started, you were not aware of that other group.
Yeah, so I was aware of Sigurd Olson from Ely, Minnesota. I was aware of this guy because he's kind of one of the giants, in canoeing history. And if you ever read about him or see any pictures, look him up online, Sigurd Olson, and his story and who he was, what he did, and kind of what led to him doing what he did. And writing the books that he wrote, which one of them is The Singing Wilderness, which is a great book if you want a feel-good book, if you love the outdoors and canoeing and all that, it's a great book for that. But anyway, he started Voyagers with a French spelling, canoe trips. I didn't know this. So when I went to start Voyagers canoe trips, I was like, somebody's already taken this?
Wait, what do you mean?
You gotta be kidding me. But it turned out
that domain name's gone, man.
Yeah, it turned out it couldn't have been better because and it was a surprise. So that's
that's neat. Have you guys talked?
Oh no.
Okay.
Before I had a chance, I would have loved to have met and I would have driven up there to meet him, Ralph Freese, guys like this that were giants. Unfortunately, my opportunity or window of opportunity didn't open.
Time scale plays a
Well, you know, when you're in your 30s, you're hard at it, you know, and you know, working and you're, you know, raising a family and which is, you know, this started while our girls were still young.
I was going to say, what age were they when they're...
Well, they're 22 and 24 now.
Right on.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It's one finishing school and one...
Yeah, well, no, they're both, well, our youngest is still in taking courses, our oldest. Yeah, they've moved on, they've got careers and...
That's
and,
exciting.
And they're great girls and super smart, way different stratosphere than I ever was at that age. There's no comparison. I like to point to them and say they'll tell the story. But nice. But when I'll tell you what, and maybe this is for the listener, when we would pull out of the driveway and our girls were little, you know, and they'd be on the porch with mom waving, boy, that was the hardest part of the whole trip for me. Because you know, you were thinking, man alive, I hope they don't think I wish I would have had boys, because people say, you ever wish you had sons? Absolutely not. I never, never one time did I ever think that.
I've got two great son-in-laws now.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
Eventually it works out.
Right, that's it. That's right.
And oh, me too.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I had my ass.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But, yeah, so there were certain components that were tough to get over at the beginning, things like that, because I, you know, you just wonder, right, man, am I doing the right thing? Should I be employing this? But, you know, you put guys and girls together in certain theaters, and what do you get? The guys don't, their focus is totally shifted away from the leadership. They're like, they're more aware of the girls that are on the trip and showing off, and, you know.
Yeah, I would think it would be a pretty, a very... good up a co-ed venue.
Probably not a great idea.
No. You'd need some,
at least not with the guys that I grew up with.
You have to get a one-to-one counselor thing.
Yeah, one-to-one counseling.
Oh my God.
But no, it's been a lot of fun. I think for me, it keeps me active with the restoring the gear, always cleaning it up, giving everything a coat of oil, maintaining the canoes. We're always looking for help. Matter of fact, we're looking for guys that are able to rebuild the wood canvas canoes.
See, there we go. This is,
well,
yeah, there's your call to action.
Let's talk about that for a minute. I mean, on your website, you got a lot of opportunities to donate. So if anybody's listening in there, you know, it sounds like something they'd want to, you know, support with cash. The website is up there, and it'll be on our webpage when we do this. But also, you know, the donations, you take boots and sweaters and...
Yes.
Gear.
Yeah.
So if you got any of that stuff and figure out a way to get it to David.
Yeah,
we've got a bunch of loaner gear. And it's funny, you'll go through seasons where no one will use it, and then suddenly, all of a sudden, boom, there's a lot of people. All the loaner gear is good stuff. You know, we pick up those L.L. Bean, you know, the main hunting shoe. And
you get some of that old vintage gear. And it's heavy, but it's warm.
Yeah, and it's good, and it'll get him through. Because, you know, you get some young guy, and he maybe he's the family doesn't have a lot of money, and they got only one pair of shoes.
Yep.
You don't want to sacrifice that one pair of shoes that he has to wear to school the next week, you know. So, which, by the way, we get him out of school for one day.
There you go. Well, yeah. There's the big
icing
on the cake.
Which I think everyone should be able to get out of school for one day. For a canoe trip, especially.
That's a huge deal, man.
Yeah,
that's the kind of stuff you're talking about, carrying it forward with them.
Yeah,
that's one of those intangible memories that will go forward as
well. That's right. Yeah,
different kind of education, but probably is valuable or more than what they're what that day in school would provide.
What's the typical reaction like when one of these young men beds down for the first time under a canoe in a canvas wrap? How's that
Well, I've wondered that myself, because if you ask, you're not gonna get. They're gonna always try to give you the answer. They think you
the tough guy answer.
Yeah, you know, the tough guy answer. But I know for a fact there's guys that are apprehensive, and then there's guys that are like gung ho. And there, we, you know, you always get some guys that are like, I camp outside whenever I can. Well, and then others that never have.
You probably march them hard enough so when it's time to lay down, they're ready to do it.
Oh, they're tired.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, there's, you know, you get enough calories, enough hydration, and enough physical activity, and they'll sleep soundly.
We, the first night, we usually have brisket. And brisket, potatoes, we boil the potatoes, everything. I mean, we made cheesy potatoes, real butter, and lots of it. Beans or peas or something like that. And it's a good meal. And then there's nuts and things like dried fruit. And then we have coffee and, you know, we have employed hot cocoa, which was, I don't know. I guess it's all right, but anyway. So then we have apple juice, or we have pineapple juice that we, so they've got some variety.
Okay.
There's tea for some, usually the older guys like tea or whatever else. And but you're right, once they get done eating, and then we sit around that fire and we get out. And one of the things too is we...
His eyelids get a little heavy.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many of them are turned in before 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. There's always a few diehards that we all sit. I always seem to be the last one to bed, and then I get up. I'm always awake at 5, and then I get, you know, wrangle things in the kitchen and start getting water boiling and coffee on. And,
sure.
Which is kind of appealing to me anyway. I like
sitting
there.
Well, there's a certain little zen pleasure, I think, that while everybody's asleep and you're up and get that first cup of coffee going and the fire cranking, and it's kind of fun.
If you look at the website, if you pull that up, our newsletter can be linked in the upper right-hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
And if you open that up, there are some pictures of the camp. And we've got some night pictures that they take. We've got one of the guides in training there, Ian Bartz. He does a lot of the photography. He takes a lot of the pictures. And... some really nice pictures. So you got kerosene lanterns burning in there. So that's our light source, which is also another item that seems to get attention, you know.
I should think. A little bit different from LED flashlights.
Yeah. Well, we do give everybody a flashlight just because, you know, you're going to, you know, you're in the dark, you're out of your element. But you can see on that newsletter, if you were to go to that link, open that up, and you'll see there's a lot of emphasis on old stuff and the camp. And
I think the listeners will enjoy looking at this because it does give you a good sense.
Well, there's always, I try to put the newsletter together with a little bit of history. There's a recipe in there. Usually I get those out of, I just finished a book called Tall Trees and Tough Men. And so one of the recipes that you see in there for apple sass is out of that book.
You find Doc Holden's Idol of the Bamboo or the Bamboo Rod?
Mm-mm.
You should take a look at that if you can find a copy of it. He's got, you know, because he goes in on how to make, you know, it's a cane rod maker. He was one of the early cane rod makers, Doc Holden. He taught Everett Garrison, he taught him how to make rods. But he's also in this book, he's got in the back, it tells how to set up camps and gives you a, you know, detailed plan on how to make a tent and waterproof it with tar and pine pitch. And I mean, it's, he goes
that's
into
what we're
a,
about.
A lot of the old stuff. It sounds like
real old school. Yeah.
Which I believe personally, everybody likes the idea of that. It's just that we live in such a society of convenience today that really nobody, they say, well, yeah, I could do that. It sounds interesting, but it's just easier to just have this. Whereas once you do it, then you're like, you know what? I'm not going back. I'm going to do it this way.
Well, to your point, you know, when listeners take a look at the newsletter and they see that evening shot with the, you know, the kerosene lantern illuminating the cotton fly.
Kitchen.
It just, I mean, my goodness, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It's what I think it keeps me grounded too, because you know every year you know you have a place where it gets hard to get everything together, and we try to be packed 2 weeks before we launch, and there's times where it's just there's a lot to do, and so sometimes going through a newsletter or some old pictures kind of helps reground your you know why you're doing it. you know, so you get your bearings again and go back into it.
Just get reinvigorated and inspired again.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, good on you, sir.
What is it?
I say good on you.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. There's a lot, and again, there's a lot of people that make it a reality. The ladies that have contributed their help and feeding and helping planning and putting things together.
Well, what's the diet run? I mean, we're talking old-timey stuff. Are we talking about porridge and bacon fat? And, I mean, what would a meal consist of?
Do you bring a tin of lard?
Cornbread and...
No, we don't, but I have a lot of butter. Salted butter. So
okay.
Big block. So we'll have brisket, dried potatoes that we'll boil. We're moving to more of your freeze-dried stuff. But a lot of fresh fruit. Fresh fruit.
Bannock, or do you do that?
No, not yet, but maybe. It's not everybody's taste, I guess, but...
we used to do that when we backpacked, but... Because we could carry a lot of bannock because we didn't, you know, we did the low impact REI camp. You know.
Well, we do have for like lunch would be meat sticks and cheese and crackers, and so lunch is always real simple.
Trail mixed up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yep. Always mixed nuts, walnuts.
Quick protein and carbs.
Yep.
Low mess.
Put a little bit of chocolate in there. The next morning it'll be pancakes. We make our own batter. We use a couple of different. We usually use a donut mix to supplement some of the ingredients in the batter or the dry batter.
Okay.
And then we always use real milk or cream, heavy whipping cream. That's all we bring. Heavy whipping cream, lots of butter, real maple syrup.
155-gallon drum of heavy cream to go, please.
Well, one of the things that surprised
doesn't
me.
Doesn't sound like calories is a big issue.
Because you're going to burn them
you're
all.
These guys all got, 26-inch waist or 27-inch waist.
I was
going to
say, they're young and they can handle a 5,000-calorie diet.
Whatever they put in, they're going to metabolize off with that
kind
of work.
Exactly.
The next night, it's pork steaks or maybe porterhouses. We'll have sometimes New York strip. And a lot of these guys never had that either. It's it's good that they get a chance to, and it's always on flat iron or over the fire.
Nice.
And, if you only have pine, we do it on the flat iron because, you cook a steak over pine, it's not going to be as good as it is over here or something. but it's always quality ingredients, and we try to package everything so that, you know, if you were to see it, it's something that you would see, in the 1920s.
So it's not the Blazing Saddle Bean Feast.
Yeah, not the Blazing Saddle Bean Feast. Matter of fact, in the last few trips, we haven't had any baked beans. But occasionally we will, and we'll try to bake them down. Sometimes meal preparation, you got two guys, a couple hours getting that put together. So timing.
One of our favorite things was wild rice.
Oh, yeah.
Started in the morning. And then go out and do your stuff, and then by the time you came back to camp, it's good to go. And
oh yeah,
it tastes so good.
Just, it is.
Nutty and
yeah, buddy.
Like that at the end of the day, nice companion.
It's fun to, I think, to cook on the banks of the river, sleep on the bank. Something about the camp, and being up at before everybody else is, and getting that fire started. And
how long a distance do you guys paddle in a day?
We used to set up multiple camps. Now we're doing we'll canoe into a camp. We'll spend Friday afternoon there, late afternoon, all day Saturday, and then paddle out on Sunday.
Okay.
So 40 miles.
Okay.
Typically where we're at. There are some that may be a skosh more or a skosh less.
Okay.
Yeah. And if somebody starts to ask, hey, when are we going to be there, or how far is it?
When we get there.
We warn them. And usually the young guys that have already been on the trip that have experience will warn them in a way that we won't warn them. And say, hey, shut up. We had one kid, he goes, hey, shut up, man. He goes, because it's a 20-minute, literally a timed 20-minute speech on the bank of the river where we're all standing there. The last time we did it was raining. Because this young man, I said, hey, man, you want to know what it looks like to be there? I says, it's a 20-minute speech. So I said, keep asking. I said, you'll be there. And his dad was along for the trip, which is even better.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, a couple of them you know, or the so a couple of them experienced guys rolling their eyes, and we're standing there on the bank of the river, and it's this whole speech of what it looks like to be there, and we're gonna, you'll start hearing people say this, this and that, or whatever. You know, you'll never hear it out of them again.
A little cruel and unusual.
Yeah.
Not very nice.
You'll never hear them say it again. Oh, they'll say, funny. Hey, you know what? I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and wait. We'll be there when we get there. So
the next trip is the father-daughter trip?
It is, and that's in September.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and is that the last trip of the year then?
No, we'll have a trip, and we're actually changing the dates. So in the newsletter, it'll be the following week. Actually, the 13th, 14th, and 15th of October. And that'll be the last trip.
Where's that one going to be?
On the El Salvo, probably.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Now, we'll usually make the final decision in the month leading up to that. But like I said before, it'll always be a stretch that we're familiar with, and you know, we know what to expect out of it. So,
plenty of easy navigable water that way. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot less, like say, when we go in April or early May, very little pressure on the river. October, very little pressure on the river. So you're not out there competing with, you know, and again, nothing against people tubing and having fun. It's just that the element, you know, it does conflict a little bit with what we're trying to do. So it works out. You know, we don't do it in, because people will say, hey, why aren't you going in the warm time of the month? Like, it's not about that. You know, it's not about tank tops and tubes and splashing in the water.
I ain't saying nothing.
Yeah. Well, they're not missing anything that way either.
So. You'll still get a guy on a warm day in October. He'll say, hey, you mind if we go swimming? You're like, knock yourself out. They're only in there for about 30 seconds.
Yeah. You can rinse the sweat off and get the hell out of there.
It's funny how that turns out. Before we moved up, we used to, when the girls were still in school, we'd all come up for fall holiday and go up to Traverse City and typically get, you know, one of the places on East Bay and just get a room there. Well, we had checked in and the girls said, we're going to go explore. And Les had gone down to do something and the lady at the desk goes, it's the weirdest thing. There's two kids out there jumping off a rock in the bay. Well, we know where the girls are now.
Yeah, we know where they're at.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. Swimming in Lake Superior are not something you want to do for a long time.
Yeah.
Very rare.
That's a little chillier.
It is a little colder, I bet you.
My toes in there last week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where were you at?
It was up in Ironwood.
Oh, yeah. Holy cow.
Our oldest kids have just settled there and are getting all set in and organized, and we got to swing through and check out their new digs and explore the shoreline of Superior.
Rocky.
Love it.
Awful.
It's
rocky.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
It's beautiful. But, well, good stuff. Enough. We don't want to hear about my travel adventures. We want to hear about yours.
Hey, it's all good. Travel, rivers, it's all good.
It is good.
Well, so is this coffee, by the way. This coffee is
more?
Great. Yeah, I'll take a lot more.
A lot more. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, David, thank you.
Yeah,
you bet.
It's
been great speaking with you, great learning a little bit about your program, and I think our listeners will enjoy this, and they'll respond and reach out to you if they can.
Yeah.
Respond with money.
Well, that's never a bad idea.
It's never a bad idea. Or if somebody has...
Or the gift of time goes a long way.
Skills or talents, and they want to, you know, especially somebody that can repair old wood canvas canoes, we're definitely open to that. So, and we may do the North Branch. We'll see here this fall. We have to scout it yet and see if it'll work, but then end on the mainstream. So
yeah, you'd have to end up down at Parmalee, but that'd be a fun little outing.
Yeah,
I think river depth might be your biggest challenge there.
Upper here, right from levels down. Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of draw do the canoes have?
Well, the freighter canoes, which we usually have two that carry the multitude of the gear, I guess, is, I would say probably at the most a foot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, so that...
The tumble home and the wider, the bigger canoes, they don't take on much water. You can get them through some surprising water. Again, when they're fully loaded, going out, it's... you know, because you've eat up all the weight.
Oh, sure, sure. So, yeah. Well, yeah, just like a race car, you're going to burn fuel through the race.
Yeah, right.
Lighten up, so.
Very rarely do we have problems with that. But again, that's one of the reasons why we scout and get it all figured out, because nobody wants to drag their canoes and walk it.
Right.
You know, so we try to avoid all
well,
that.
Well, and, you know, maybe that ranges for a buckboard and a couple of horses to...
yeah, right, get us
to
out.
Get involved to continue with the theme, so.
Yeah.
David, thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank
Great
you for
work.
Your time.
Much appreciated.
Yeah, you betcha. Thank you for having us.
Safe floats, good travels, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet.
Thank you,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, as you can tell, just a really quality program and a very unique individual. Really glad we got to cross paths with David, and we'll look forward to doing so again. So in the meantime, the museum's open through the end of trout season. We'll be here until the last Saturday of September. This weekend happens to be the Lovell's Bridge Walk, so while we are dating the podcast, if you're in the vicinity, by all means, the fabulous and world-famous Lovell's Bridge Walk, you know, people have been training all year for this, for the grueling, what is it, I don't know, 50-foot walk. But, yeah, stop by. A lot of fun for the whole community. So we'll look forward to seeing you. Make yourself known at the museum. And until next week, mind your back cast.